Welcome back. Item number seven, report number seven, the 2011-2012 proposed distribution of funds. I will first call upon Superintendent Schmidt to introduce this report. Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm pleased to present and request of the board to the approval of the distribution of funds this evening, which will enable the administration to proceed with the projected allocations so that schools and decision units in Central can undertake the next stage of their planning, and that the district can meet Alberta Education's budgetary deadline of June 30th this year. This is the first of a three-step process that the board will engage in terms of its budget deliberations. As the administration presents the district plan and the distribution of funds, this is truly the introduction of what it is that we would like to achieve in the coming months. The second step for the board will be the introduction of the actual expenditure budget, providing much greater detail of our staffing plans and our surplus deficit situation as projected, which will be presented to the board on May 24th. And of course, final approval of the expenditure budget will occur on June 14th. First of all, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to point out to the board that attached in this report is the district plan. The district plan is an overview, which is an overarching plan to guide the planning of schools and central units over the next 3 years and beyond. Briefly, the plan outlines four core strategies with 16 goals to be accomplished over the next 3 years. The core strategies will likely need to be in place much longer. However, the goals as they are achieved will help the district achieve the vision, mission, and priorities that the board has recently passed. In relation to the actual decision of the board makes to approve the distribution of funds, we will walk through the assumptions made to develop this recommendation, provide an overview of changes we are making within the district to achieve the goals of minimizing the impacts of funding shortfalls on classrooms, implementing operational efficiencies, implementing core services to be available to all schools regardless of their size or budget, and implement organizational design changes to respond to our changing educational context. In short, the district plan, the implementation of core services, and the redesign of student learning services will help us achieve the district vision, mission, and priorities. At this time, I'd call on Mr. Smith to provide an overview of our distribution of funds report, including some of the planning assumptions and general implications.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the superintendent has indicated, this is the next step in our budget process. This distribution of funds recommendation will allow us to gather information in order to bring back to the board regarding our 2011-12 budget. This information will include the use of school and department reserve funds as well as staffing information. As we built this distribution of funds in Appendix 4 that's in the attachment, we used some key assumptions. The first assumption is that a balanced budget will be prepared. Unlike 2010-11, where reserve funds in the amount of $9.6 million were used to supplement the budget, we use an approach here whereby we balance the budget using the revenue as provided in the attached Appendix 2. The second assumption is that all budget revenue is based on student enrollment. The government funds us based on our enrollments, and we have used this funded enrollment count as identified in Appendix 3 to balance this budget and to distribute these funds. We are basing on the Appendix 3 information. You will see that we have projected 77,120 for funded FTE. We are very confident in this number, as the planning department has been very accurate in the past with their projections of enrollments. The third assumption is any reductions have been made to reduce the impact on students and classrooms. Thus, you will note in Appendix 4 that there has been a 1.2% reduction in school allocations and a 3.7%, or three times as large, a reduction in district and central DUs. Actual central reductions are almost five times the amount and on a percentage basis at 5.8%. Fourth assumption, key assumption that we've used, is unit costs for staff are based on costs as we know them today. No assumptions regarding staffing have been made in this distribution of funds. We've also, in this recommendation, we've reflected the government's increase in the basic grant of 4.54%. But we have also fully recognized the reductions in funding for class size, AC, relative cost of purchasing, ESL, enrollment growth and decline, and others, totaling over $23 million in reduction in funding from the provincial government. This has resulted in a net overall decrease in revenue of 0.6% for 2011-2012 when compared to prior years. Mr. Chair, I have you turn to Appendix 4 to quickly run through the proposed distribution of funds. And in there, you will see how we have built this. We have used operating revenue of $818,153,000 based on the assumptions as indicated. In the school allocations, you will see we have increased them by 7.2% to $496.6 million. That is giving more flexibility to schools in their allocations in order to allow them to meet the needs specifically for their schools. You will see a reduction of 29.1% in the other supplemental school allocations. The majority of these reductions are the result of the government cuts of over $23 million, as I indicated, as well as the superintendent indicated that we have transferred and centralized some of the services which provide more efficient services to the schools at no cost. So we've pulled out over $10 million in plant operation and maintenance funds to centralize that, and they will provide the maintenance to schools. We've also had a number of one-time programs that the funding elapsed because it was funded with one-time money. Mr. Chair, I would go down to the district level fixed costs where you see a reduction of 1.9%. The district level fixed costs we best described as utilities, insurance, telephones. We have made some improvements in the utility costs and an improvement in usage of utilities, and therefore we have this slight reduction. District level committed cost would be such things as student transportation funding, plant operation maintenance, which is now with schools. We also have election costs in there, we have audit fees in there, and we have reduced those by about 3.5%. The last category you see there is the central DUs, or the decision units. And Mr. Chair, we have reduced those by 5.8%. And that is due to efficiencies. We are trying to maintain the service levels, even though we have reductions. It will be very difficult to do, but as a result of trying to budget, balance the budget, as well as maintain services to the schools and keep as much money out of the schools as possible, we believe that we could reduce this by 5.8% and still maintain services to meet the needs of our schools. With that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it back to the superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to bring this presentation to the close, I'm informing the Board of a plan to address our anticipated staffing challenges, along with the use of the district's reserves to meet these challenges. And the district's current reserves are held at schools and at central units. I will be directing all principals and DU managers to provide their most current and accurate projection of reserves and deficits for the year ending August 31st, 2011. Our normal procedure is at the end of April that we receive an update from our principals and DU managers. This will be an opportune time for us to examine those projections. Of course, it will be at a much higher level of scrutiny at this time. These projections will be reviewed by assistant superintendents and executive directors. In addition, is my expectation that principals will apply a portion of their reserve to support staffing levels, and that these staffing levels must be supported by enrollment and, of course, anticipated reserves. The assistant superintendents and I will be monitoring the level of our reserves that will be used to enhance our staffing complement. Information will be shared with the board in an information report on May 24th, which is the introduction of the actual expenditure budget for 2012-2013. In that report, the board will see not only the proposed distribution of funds, but they will also see schools and central units staffing requirements, their surplus deficit projections, and planned general distribution of funds. A portion of our reserves will be used to hold on to some of our staff positions, and this will become clear in the coming weeks. What this boils down to, Mr. Chairman, is that our staff need to do their work with the information that they will receive based on this distribution of funds, and that the board will have an opportunity to examine in much greater detail on May 24th at the introduction of the expenditure budget. Mr. Chair, by approving the distribution of funds, the administration will proceed with the projected allocations so that schools and DUs can undertake the next stage of their planning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee comments or questions? Trustee Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a number of questions, so yeah, thanks. The first one being clarification or confirmation that the total expenditure of $818 million is coming specifically from revenues, that there are no additional in this $818 million number, that we're not actually accessing any reserves. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. This does not contemplate accessing of reserves. However, I've proposed to the board a way of actually using our staff expertise to access reserves to support staffing in schools and central units.
So what I'm looking for, I guess, is clarification on how this year's budgetary process is different from last year's, where I know the previous board did access reserves that were actually school and central DU assigned, that they were accessed centrally as a board. And this year I'm hearing that there's a different effort to encourage schools and DUs specifically to choose how to access their own individual reserves. And I'm just wondering where that change came from or how that came to light. If we're using different language to essentially come to the same outcome, which is accessing reserves to attempt to retain staff, why it is that we're having that shift in terms of accounting practice or other way of explaining the process.
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the question. It is indeed a different process from the previous year. And there are two primary factors, and I'm sure Mr. Smith and his staff may come up with others, but I think I'll highlight two factors that prompt this particular change in this approach that I'm suggesting, recommending to the board. First of all, last year we were actually looking at an anticipated $34 million surplus of operating reserves and potentially higher than that. And that we felt quite confident in that particular amount of money as a cushion of funds by which the board could in fact borrow against that and allocate those funds to our schools, knowing that we would have to make up those funds in coming years. So that the first part is we felt comfortable with the amount of the reserves that we had, that we'd be able to maintain some flexibility at a district level. What has changed, the second part of that, Mr. Chair, is the fact that I'm not as confident in the level of our operating reserves at this point in time, given that year over year the district has spent in 1 year $18 million of reserves from the 2009, 10, and 10-11. And my concern there, Mr. Chairman, is that I'm not at all confident that that our reserves will be as strong as we hope them to be. By engaging our leaders in this particular practice, as I've suggested, it puts the decision making in terms of looking at enrollment, staff needs, student needs, and examining their reserves, that they would have the opportunity to make a solid decision relative to their unique needs. And I think that that would, in fact, be a very appropriate way of use of those reserves to meet the needs across the district. If I might, Mr. Chairman, the third area is that although we see sort of that 1.2% reduction in terms of school allocations, I would like to emphasize that we've done some very significant work to try and bump up per pupil allocations across the district, believing that that will, in fact, help create some flexibility across all schools, whether they have a surplus or not, to manage their staffing. Notwithstanding, of course, we do know that our staff unit costs are certainly fairly significant. But, Mr. Chairman, I believe that we can achieve the board's intent of maintaining as many staff members as we possibly can while using the surplus and the reserves that we do have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Hoffman.
Thank you. So just to sort of paraphrase, I'm hearing that we're encouraging the school level and the DU level to make decisions regarding their reserves to, in an effort to retain as many staff as possible given their current level of reserves for next year. So thank you. I appreciate that. I also just want to highlight a few things going through. You can start the timer now if you want. I'm noticing that our provincial allocations are down $4.7 million, and I think Mr. Smith identified that that's a 0.6% reduction. Also, we know that we have staff cost increases to specifically our teacher groups that are predetermined. I think that's over $20 million. That's correct. Thank you. And I guess I do have a couple of questions. One is, how many days of operation would our current reserves cover if we, as a district, had no other source of revenue but our reserves?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, the financial reporting profile from the provincial government that was submitted for us, we would have $34 million. The day's operations was 10.29, which is down from 17.04 from the year before.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Trustee Hoffman.
So about 2 weeks we could operate as a district on our reserves.
That's at the $34 million. That's correct.
Thank you. There are a couple other line items that I just found particularly telling of what the current budget situation is for our district. Enrollment growth and decline cut, that was $4.3 million last year. Relative cost of purchasing cut, that was, or cut in half, sorry, that was $6.5 million last year. AC initiative, $10.8 million last year, cut in half again. So a lot of these base grants that we're receiving as a district have been cut. A number of them have been cut entirely or cut by 50%. And while the per pupil allocation has gone up to our district as a whole, when you look at the factors, including these base operating grants, going down, it actually results in a net decrease of income for our district from the province of 0.6%. And I think that's quite a different story than what's being painted from the province over the last month or so. So I appreciate having these all outlined. At our conference meeting, we were given a more detailed version of the expenditures. I'm just wondering why this slightly higher level version of this same $818 million was brought to public board.
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We wanted to provide the most succinct and highest level of information relative to the distribution of funds. Noting, Mr. Chairman, that on May 24th, we will be providing much more detailed school-by-school, unit-by-unit information relative to actual planned expenditures. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, the question from the administration's perspective is does this type of action, trying to ensure that school funding is maintained as much as possible, that we are looking at redesign and changes of operations within central units to ensure that schools get as much funding as we can possibly manage, that those actions reflect the values and the principles that the board has outlined in its vision, mission, and priorities and ensuing requests or ensuing information provided to the administration through conference committee discussions. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Huffman.
Thank you. And in an effort to understand that maybe a little more fully as public, one of the biggest areas in terms of school allocations that we're proposing a reduction in this next year, according to Appendix 4, is other supplemental school allocations. I'm wondering if the superintendent could comment on specifically that 29% reduction and what types of line items that would include.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will call on Mr. Smith to provide some detail around what that changes are and where those funds are in terms of providing additional support from a central perspective. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a number of items that what we have done is we have reallocated them up into the basic school allocations, and I will go through them as well. There were some one-time funds that were used for certain things like literacy reserve funding. There was one-time funding, and that has now been used up. The program is established and going forward, and therefore there were no funds for that. We have lost the AC money, so we reduced that amount. So that money was in there specifically. We also have some differences in new school establishment grant that was received for the ASAP schools. That's all gone. We had some money we used for adaptation intervention grants. We rolled that up into the basic school allocations. That was over $8 million. We've also reduced the class size. The government has cut the class size for 4 to 6. All that money has been taken out of the budget as well. Those would be the, oh, we have some, we had some set aside last year for benefit and increment costs, and that from last year for staffing for an adjustment. This year we did not provide anything for staffing cost adjustments that we did not know about. That was a huge component of it.
Mr. Superintendent.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, $10 million of that amount was actually maintenance, operation and maintenance funding that would normally be sent out to schools, and that has been retained as part of our central operation so that the services are provided. The services to schools are provided at no additional cost to the schools. So it's really a combination of actual hard cost reduction and also redistribution of funds with the provision of service at no cost to schools.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Hoffman.
Thank you. So for clarification, the $42 million reduction that we're seeing under other supplemental school allocations, $10 million of that is being reassigned to Central. So that's approximately a quarter of it?
The majority of it is the staffing cost adjustment, Mr. Chair.
Staffing cost. And so staffing cost adjustment plus $10 million that's being reallocated Central.
You've got AC of $5.4 million. You've got some class size money.
So essentially all the grants that have been cut for that base operating grants that have been cut from the province are lumped into that $42 million.
That's correct. And then there's a reallocation of $8 million up into the school allocations for the intervention.
Thank you very much. My final comment that I want to make is that I had hoped that at some point in these sort of 16 initiatives relating to the Edmonton Public School District's plan at a glance on page 4 of this report, that I'd hope that there would be some sort of reflection of community or connection to the community in terms of citizenship and it being a reciprocal relationship and encouraging communities to be supportive of our schools and our students to be supportive of the communities in which they're in. And I'm wondering if the superintendent can comment with regard to that, how that might fit into these 16 specific points within the district plan, or if it's not there, why it's not there.
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are two areas that where the whole concept of community and community engagement are important. They don't show up at the high-level goals here, but they do show up in terms of actions that the district will be undertaking. The first one is under staff capacity and specifically school leadership development, we will be working with school leadership quality practice standard, of which one dimension is in fact parent and community engagement, that we need to support our staff, our principals in particular, in developing their skills and strengths in engaging community and their participation in an appropriate way relative to school activities. The second one relates to the development and implementation of strategies to promote student health, citizenship, health, and creativity, where we in fact need to be engaging in partnerships with a number of external groups in order for us to achieve some of those goals, particularly as it relates to student health, citizenship. And even though we're undertaking our own internal activities, we know that we need to have we need to engage and support others. Mr. Chairman, there may in fact be one or two other places in which I can point that out, but those are two very specific areas where our engagement with the community is highlighted. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Huff.
Nothing further at this point.
Okay. Further comments, questions from my colleagues? Trustee Ripley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank the superintendent and his staff for a really thoughtful budget. I know that I believe the superintendent has a basis of allocation committee, which is composed of principals and DU leaders, and I know that that committee looks every year at what's important, how are we going to allocate the funds, and I have a comment here that's sort of describing the basis of allocation for trustees, and I have written down beside it, someone said, and I don't know who this was, it's okay, you know, when times are tough, as long as everyone is treated fairly. So I guess my question to the superintendent, Mr. Chair, if I may, is does the superintendent feel that all staff in central and across the district will feel that this budget is going to treat them fairly in enduring the pain of a cutback? Thanks.
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's a very challenging question. When we are, in fact, examining and looking at what would amount to some staff reductions from a central perspective, permanent teaching staff would have places in our school district, not necessarily in this building, for example. Some of our support staff, of course, would permanent support staff would be, you know, looking for perhaps potentially looking for placements in schools and those kinds of things. And schools themselves will be challenged with ensuring that that they are indeed being responsible with their funds, but also accessing what additional funds they might have to hang on to as many staff members as possible. That is what we are trying to do, Mr. Chairman, that we are trying to be as fair as we possibly can, knowing that that for some people in our district that it will mean a different place of work, potentially. And in some cases, for people who have a temporary or probationary contracts, that it might mean that they don't have a position at this point in September, but that we would be working very hard to support them and trying to bring them back on staff as quickly as we possibly can as resources become available. I'm confident, Mr. Chairman, that our processes that we have in place through our HR work will be as fair as we can possibly make it, knowing that we have some potentially challenging times ahead of us.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Ripley.
Thank you very much for that reflection on the difficult decisions that our leaders will have to make across the district. I appreciate that, it does make me think. I know that through central department reviews, etc., that there's so much good work that is happening in our programs unit and you know, in our facilities unit to try and make sure that good support happens for all schools across the district. And so I really, that 5.8% decrease for the central units worries me a little bit. I'm wondering, will the central be as able to be robust still and to support our schools and our kids, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll certainly begin, and I think that there may be some of our executive team that could speak to some specific areas that they're responsible for in terms of this. We've undertaken in this last 18 months a very significant review of our central services operations and asked, out of many questions, one of the core questions related to core services and how we might be able to deliver services to schools in a more equitable way without it being tied to their own particular budgets, and knowing that will come at some cost, but that we, by managing it in a central way, that we might be able to achieve some cost effectiveness and efficiencies. That work has been done, and we are moving forward with some core services, centralization of maintenance, for example, that funding to deliver those services as needed across the district at no cost to schools. At the same time, Mr. Chairman, we've also been undertaking a very significant review of student learning services, and in fact a redesign of that work to manage changing demand and need, but also to do it in a way that we hope achieve some cost effectiveness, but also knowing that our present format with cost recovery was really not achieving what we had hoped to achieve across the district. We were running into issues of equitable access to some of those resources, and we absolutely had to do something differently. And so we are undertaking some fairly significant change with reduced funding, and that was in fact one of the givens that I had pointed out to our executive team moving forward, that we have to undertake this change with no new funding and likely less, and we are certainly in the likely less category at this point. Having said that, Mr. Chairman, I believe that our staff have worked very creatively and courageously in coming up with some new plans for us to move forward, and it will be very challenging for us. And perhaps I'll call on Ms. Parker to talk a little bit about how we're planning to achieve our educational quality support in our new plans.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Ms. Parker.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, the review that we've done on student learning services was not based on the fact that we believed that there was going to be a cutback or less funding in the year. It was based on the two questions that we were asked to respond, which is what do we need to be good at in student learning services and what do we need to be designed to do? And as we looked through the units in the areas, which were programs, curriculum, consulting services, and leadership services, we were able to find areas where we had some duplication of services, where we had some redundancies, where we had some gaps. So what we were able to bring forward to the superintendent and to the steering committee was a plan that looked at a fundamental shift in how we provide service to schools. We know that by not having a strong central services department that supports students and supports staff, that we are actually downloading more work and more responsibility onto our teachers. And so we needed to be able to create an organization that allowed us to provide high quality support equitably, efficiently, and across the district. And so what we were able to manage was a different delivery model. And as the superintendent mentioned, it is a change. It is a significant change in how we provide support, and it will be to school groupings. It will be looking very much targeted at what are the needs that are coming out of groups of schools because of the context, because of the students that they have in their schools, and what are those areas from the district plan, the 15 areas that you have in front of you, that we're going to leverage up year one, year two, year three, because we know that that's the work that we need to be supporting in schools. And because of that, and despite what we know is going to be reduced staffing complement, at least in student learning services, we are very confident that the level of support that we can provide out for all students and all teachers will allow us to continue to have high quality educational opportunities for all of our students. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Trustee Rickard.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that description of the work that you've undertaken. I guess we'll see how it all unfolds. And I'm really glad to hear the confidence that, you know, you think that that this will better support our children. That's wonderful. I heard you talk about, you know, taking a look at gaps and redundancies, and I guess that makes me think, I just want to ask the question, if I may, Mr. Chair, about, is there any stone unturned in terms of our financial situation where we could be saving any money, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have turned over a lot of rocks in this past 18 months, knowing that there are likely a few more that we have to examine. And certainly moving forward to next year, we are undertaking further reviews of corporate services and finance and infrastructure to again look at another level and layer of redesign work with the view of gaining some efficiencies and effectiveness in the way we look at that work. We certainly have gone a long way in this term and will continue to look at ways of gaining efficiencies. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Ripley.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple more questions, but should I be quiet for a while?
Well, there's not a lot of people in the queue, Trustee Ripley. Okay. So if you want to continue, that will be fine.
So my question, based on sort of looking under every rock, I know that we're projecting 77,120 students. That's correct. I believe I read that correctly. And I know that our space situation in the district continues to be a challenge, and I'm just wondering, given that enrollment, how many excess spaces will the district have? Do
Mr. Smith? Know? Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, based on information I have from the planning department, we have over 37,000 excess spaces based on this enrollment.
Is there a cost to that? And I know that this is a very high-level distribution of funds that you've presented tonight, but perhaps on May 24th, or can I tonight see where that it costs money. We know it costs money to heat all spaces in our district, whether or not there's students in them. I'm just wondering, where is that reflected in the budget, or where will that be reflected?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, we have attempted in many cases to reduce utility costs, those types of things, but as we are heating empty spaces, it is costing us more money. There's no doubt about that. Consolidating locations also does result in some savings in staffing. There is also some savings if we look at some of the allocations to the smaller schools. As the schools get larger, we do not have to subsidize them as much with some of our allocations. So there are some savings if the schools were larger and fuller.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Schmidt, Mr. Superintendent, would you like to supplement?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And recognizing that the board has made a clear statement and direction around a moratorium of school closure, it is important for the board to also understand that we are doing everything we possibly can to reduce and minimize our costs. And in fact, one of the decision factors that was important to me in the centralizing of our maintenance funds was that we would have to do some very serious work in terms of highlighting and profiling which schools it is that we would have to put more money into, regardless of size or enrollment, simply because that's what the building and the school needed. That's a very difficult decision for us to make, but we felt that under these circumstances, that was one of the actions we needed to take to ensure that the thin resources that we do have were distributed as fairly as we possibly might.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Ripley.
Do we have, I know in the last budget year we did spend money, I believe some money out of instructional dollars to support the PONNM. It does centralizing the funds alleviate that, or will we have another deficit, Mr. Superintendent?
Mr. Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, it would be safe to say that we would need to supplement operation and maintenance with instructional dollars.
Mr. Superintendent, Trustee Ripley.
On May 24th, will we get a better sense of how much that will be, or does that not show up anywhere? Where do I look for that, I guess, please?
Mr. Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, what we are presenting is an expenditure budget in terms of what we plan, how we plan to use the resources we do have in relation to our plans going forward. Some of the question, the responses to the questions that are being asked would show up more in terms of actual expenditure reporting. However, I think Mr. Smith can able to
supplement. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The actual budget report form that the board will be approving and submitted does break it down by section, so there will be an area for instruction, early childhood, PONM, transportation. So it will be there.
This supplemental, we are still providing two schools support for PONM support in terms of custodial staffing, but we also know that those funds alone may not be sufficient for supporting the staffing that is required, and so that will in fact be supplemented by instructional grant as well. So those are some examples. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Ripley.
One final question, Mr. Chair, and that is that I appreciated the request for information that Trustee Shipka had about class size and how much it would take to meet the ACOL measure for grades 1 to 3, I think it was. And I believe the figure noted there is 22 million, approximately. And so I'm assuming. So if we wanted, just want to know if my assumption is correct. If we wanted to have 17 on average in our grades 1 to 3 classes, K to 3 classes, we would need to increase our budget by 22 million. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is.
Okay, thank you. That's everything. I appreciate one final comment is I appreciate the way that the budget breaks down, sending most of the funding to the schools, and so at the current time, I will be voting in favor of this the distribution of funds as outlined. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Trustee Joner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say just how encouraged I was and excited I was when I had first heard about student learning services from Ms. Parker last week, and I just wanted to again reiterate my thorough excitement about what looks like is coming down the pipeline and optimistically looking forward at, you know, what is coming our way. I wanted to just ask a question regarding sort of segues from what Trustee Ripley was saying about, you know, what other areas of savings there are. In a recent conversation I had with the principal, he was expressing concern about, you know, losing some of the young superstar teachers that we have, the ones that are on probationary contracts, and just, you know, the worry and concern of possibly losing some of these wonderful young teachers. And that being said, I have nothing but the utmost and highest respect for all of our teaching staff, but also knowing full well that we have a number of teachers who are at the top of the pay grid, and maybe there's some that are, you know, looking towards retirement. And so my question is, what do we have in place right now with regards to retirement initiatives, and is that an area that we should be looking forward, you know, just for the future in order to reduce some of our costs, because that staffing is by far our highest cost. So this is where my mind goes to. Thank you.
Mr. Fraser.
Mr. Chairman, with regards to teaching staff, we currently do have in place for this year a retirement transition option program that does allow teachers to retire partway throughout the year and then be and collect their pension, as well as then being on a temporary contract till the end of the year. The retirement transition option program is also in place at the moment for our other staff groups as well, but that would be the program in place right now to encourage teaching staff.
Trustee John.
And is there anything that we're looking towards the future? Any thoughts on that?
Mr. Fraser. Mr. Chairman, in terms of looking to the future and as was pointed out, focusing on our younger teachers who are on probationary contracts, what we are putting in place and was communicated by the superintendent last week is that for our teachers on probationary contract that are recommended for a continuing contract, we will be offering those teachers, if there is not an assignment for them next year, employment as a substitute teacher and giving them preferential treatment in terms of assignments. And also we would be saying that the recommendation for continuing contract would be valid for the 2011-12 school year and the 2012-13 school year. And therefore, if assignments do pick up over the next couple of years, either due to retirements or funding changes, then those teachers, if they did find themselves in a permanent assignment, would not have to go through another probationary period. So that is part of the commitment that is being made to our younger teachers.
Trustee Johnner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's encouraging to know. I guess my heart had just gone out to this principal because, you know, it was very disappointed to not know for certain whether these, like I put it, these young superstars, he'd be able to continue to hang on to them. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee John. Trustee Spencer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly agree with Trustee Johnner's comments there. I think it would be a disaster for education in Alberta if we lost a generation, not just of teachers, but educational assistants and occupational therapists and so forth. And also the fresh perspective and energy that they bring to Edmonton Public Schools as an institution is invaluable. Institutions always have to be refreshing themselves and looking at things through a new perspective. So I think that's a vital part of our future. I guess a good news piece is that we do have some staff that will be eyeing retirement in a few years, and I think then an opportunity to hire. So if I had a message, it is to, if you're passionate about education, please hang on, we'll get to you, because we value you a lot. I appreciate in this budget that a real effort has been made to shield the children from the bad news, and I think that's an important duty. As much as possible, we've found ways to minimize the impact. We can't prevent there being an impact in the classroom, but as much as possible, we've tried to bear that internally, and I do appreciate us doing that. I have a question about the Metro Continuing Education line and noticing that there's the 7.3% increase there, and yet at the same time I also noticed that there's no increase in fees for Metro Continuing Education. I'm just wondering why there is such an increase there and why we're not looking to recover some of that through higher fees.
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that's increased enrollment at the school, and therefore everything is held flat. Is that correct? And therefore, it's just enrollment growth.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's all?
That's all for now.
Thank you. Are there any further trustees who wish to speak, bearing in mind this is the first round of comments, and we'll be opening up the floor for a second round of comments? Seeing none, I will add my thoughts. I certainly appreciate the administration's reference to the world of our reserves and the fact that some consideration is being given to accessing those reserves. I think we would not be in a particularly credible position given the view of the ministry on boards taking advantage of reserves, if indeed they have them, if we were not prepared to take advantage of those reserves and offer additional support to minimize staff reduction and any loss of program or service for students. So what that will look like, clearly we're going to have a better idea in a few weeks. The superintendent has come up with an interesting formula, and that's to ask principals to dedicate a certain amount of their reserves to support staffing levels. I think in the past, when we've accessed reserves, we've just made that decision as a board. So I'm wondering if Mr. Superintendent, you could comment on if, when we see the formula and see how the numbers play out, is it entirely workable that the board might simply identify a sum of money and go back to a more traditional approach in accessing reserves, or are we going to be committed to going down a certain path in a certain way, Mr. Superintendent?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll put it this way: if the board is contemplating that the plan that I'm proposing is not acceptable to the board in moving forward, then it would certainly be helpful to have that clearly laid out earlier rather than later, because it impacts how we manage our allocation system going forward. Of course, each method has its own risks attached to it, and I think it might be helpful just to outline very briefly what they might be, and of course I may miss a couple of points on that, but in relation to the proposal that I've shared with the board, using the work of our leaders in our schools and central units, that they would be able to access their funding, which up until traditionally has been, and up until this year, we've traditionally said not to use reserve funds for staffing because they're not sustainable. The risk in this particular method is that this is really a one-time approach to hanging on to some staff, and we are hoping, anticipating that perhaps there might be some relief in future years. That is indeed a risk that I'd like to point out to the board. But having said that, people closest to the action would be the ones that would be able to address their particular needs with their reserves. If the board were to simply say, let us actually take this particular proposed distribution of funds and take a number and roll that into our allocation system, what that does is it certainly provides some general allocation throughout all schools and central units, but it doesn't speak to the challenge that we face in terms of we don't actually know what our reserves will be moving forward, where we are basing this on projections. And we did hear earlier today through the literacy, the financial literacy workshop, that making projections is very challenging for school boards. But what that also does is it reduces any amount of flexibility that schools may have, because we would be asking them to, in fact, to freeze or hold their surpluses and not make any expenditures in relation to that. Mr. Chairman, those are some of the highlights and risks attached to either method. The reason I have recommended the first one is that we believe that it will be responsive to enrollment needs and where we actually have the money, and it does not freeze any of the other reserves that may be available for schools to use. So, Mr. Chairman, that's a long answer to a complicated question.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Indeed, many of these questions are complicated. My concern is that recognizing the desirability of having some clarity as to what the board's wishes are in this area, it's difficult for me to make a decision on what level of reserves I, as an individual trustee, am desirous of committing to support schools without knowing what the number is going to look like on the proposed giving principals the opportunity to spend a percentage of their reserves to support staffing levels. So a lot of uncertainty here. Let me just close on that point. Whatever the percentage is, which is going to depend on what the final numbers look like, if the board wished to increase the use of reserves to offset some of the reduction in funding for schools, the board would have an opportunity to up that percentage point, I would assume. Am I correct on that point, Mr. Superintendent?
Mr. Chairman, if I understand the question, depending on which method we use to access our reserves, one would be to direct our principals and decision managers to increase the use of their reserves for staffing. That would have to be by direction. And that certainly has some possibilities, but we would have to do that again sooner rather than later. If the second method is used, the risks have already been outlined, and the board chair has clearly stated what the issue is there. We don't actually know what our reserves, anticipated reserves, will be. I will reiterate, Mr. Chairman, that we are going to be asking our leaders to take a much closer, sharper look at their anticipated surplus and reserve statements, which would normally come out at the end of April. That process will continue regardless of the method, simply because we need to have the most accurate snapshot or anticipation of what our budget is. That information will certainly be shared with the board at that point.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Well, I think the board will be held accountable in the eyes of the minister, the media, and our public on what level of access to reserves we are prepared to support in order to support success in the classroom and minimize staff reduction. So I look forward to greater clarity coming to the board on what these numbers look like. And if it puts us in a bit of a timing challenge, because this information is coming only a few weeks before we have to formally approve our budget, that's, I suppose, one of the challenges that we face in this current economic climate, having to go in that direction. I just have one further point. I wonder if the superintendent could comment on the relationship between our foundational documents, vision, mission, priorities, and this distribution of funds document, and if this is the traditional link between these foundational statements, or if we are doing anything different this year in regard to the relationship between mission, vision, priorities, and our work in the area of the budget. Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you for the question. Mr. Chairman, this is actually fundamentally different from previous years, in that what we are presenting to the board is an overarching district plan with four core strategies and 16 goals that we've placed to achieve those goals. And that this will in fact become the guiding document for how our schools and central units will be planning to achieve the vision and mission and the priorities that the board has established. We believe that this will in fact bring some clarities to our planning process for all schools and central units, and closer alignment to these strategies. We've noted one example, as we engaged our staff through the discussion around core services, was that we were dealing with a number of initiatives across our district with not as much coordination and integration as people would have hoped, and that this particular document will help us achieve that, and that our budget, therefore, really needs to be supporting these priorities and these core strategies in order for us to achieve that. That is what we are attempting to do, and this is new for us, and we are looking forward to, as we work through the details, that the board will also have an opportunity to hear the detailed plans of our schools and central units in the fall when we do our results review work, to demonstrate that we are in fact much more aligned and coordinating our work more effectively, and that the budget supports that work as clearly as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Well, I'd like to close on a positive note in a challenging environment and reflect on a presentation I had the pleasure of listening to this week from a gentleman by the name of John Gott, who spoke about collective wisdom and how credible organizations identify overarching statements of belief and values, and then all of their work flows from those overarching beliefs and values. So when I see the link and the driving force of this recommendation this evening, and ultimately our budget, coming from our district priorities, mission, and vision, I see an expression of those overarching principles. And perhaps more importantly, I see a reflection of the public ownership of a significant part of public education, and that's the actual creation of the principles of a budget, because our recent work articulating, drafting the new vision, mission, and priority statements involved a significant level of public engagement. So I think one can credibly say, and it's probably not as well understood by our public as it should be, that the work identifying how we spend our money and where our priorities will be placed in the work of the district over the next year is in fact a direct expression of this public engagement process that has allowed us to understand the values that our public bring to the table in the area of public education. I think that's something we as trustees should continue to express in our conversations with parent councils and community when we have the opportunity to do so. So I'm very pleased about this change in a relationship with a clear and enhanced focus on our foundational values really driving the decisions related to this resource document and, as I say, eventually our budget. Trustee, second round of comments. Trustee Hoffman.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions left. The first being, is it an option for school principals and DU directors to not access their reserves in this coming year?
Mr. Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, unless there are unusually extenuating circumstances, my expectation is that that our reserves, a portion of our reserves, will be used to support staffing complement in units and schools.
Trustee Hoffman.
Thank you. Do we have a minimum portion in mind? I am just wondering if we're going to use all of our reserves this year or to maintain staffing, or 10% of our reserves or 20%, if we have a ballpark idea. And I know that we're asking our administrative team to make that decision, but is there a minimum amount that we want dedicated to staffing?
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was afraid you were going to ask that question. It's a very good question, and one that has certainly been one that I've been contemplating very seriously. The issue is that there are just so many conditions at play, or contingencies at play, and that if I were to say, for example, that really we should be using about 25% of our reserves to support our staffing, that would be fine if, in fact, our reserves were sufficient enough that it still would create some flexibility, knowing that our days of operation would be going down significantly in terms of our overall district reserve. If, in fact, our reserve is in the neighborhood of 3%, for example. Well, that means approximately $6 million or so would be used to support our staffing. It's probably not, well, we can't maintain the staffing to our current levels, but it would be a case in point, I suppose, a what-if scenario that it give us a pretty good idea of what we might be able to expect in terms of additional support in being accessed in schools and central units. Those are all very hypothetical, Mr. Chairman, but under some circumstances, and I guess I'll just qualify it in this way, the higher the percentage we use for staffing, it just simply means that we will have a day of reckoning, so to speak, in a year from now, without significant influx of funds through provincial grants. And so that's always the risk that we're trying to maintain and manage. The higher that percentage, the more that we have to, the loss of flexibility. So you can understand my reluctance to say a percentage. It's really going to depend it will depend a lot on what these statements come in at in at the end of April in terms of surplus and deficit. That will also give us some indication of how much room we might have and encouraging our staff, our principals and leaders to use resources to support staff.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Hoffman.
I really can appreciate that response and the complexity specifically around opening new schools next year and not having that base grant there to help with that transition, having no additional operating support from the province to help us set up these schools, I think will be extremely challenging. So if we have no reserves to help set up these new schools as a district, I think that would be very problematic. My final question is, and this is kind of a hypothetical, so you can choose not to answer it, I guess, but I like the best case or your best effort in attempting to respond is, should our schools and DUs choose not to access their reserves to maintain staff? Worst case scenario, how many exempt staff, maintenance, custodial support, teaching staff, at best estimate, would we likely lose if we did not access any of those reserves to try to maintain staff complements?
Mr. Superintendent.
Do I have to answer that question? Thank you, and I appreciate this because this is, in fact, a question that is not only on the minds of our board, certainly on the minds of all of us around the executive table, certainly in the minds of our leaders, and certainly in the minds of those people who may, in fact, be impacted by this challenging budget. So, yes, this is a significant challenge for us. This particular proposed distribution of funds is approximately $14 million less than what we've budgeted for this year. That will have an impact on staffing because most of our costs in our district are in fact staffing costs. That we might be able to minimize some of that $14 million by accessing some of our reserves will certainly be helpful, but until we actually have the reserve, until we know or have a much better handle on what our projected reserves will be, that becomes a real challenge for us. And I think I'm seeing Mr. Smith is willing to step wade into some of this, if I might call on him to provide some additional support.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And part of it is, Mr. Fraser had talked to how we're going to use the itinerant teacher method, and we're going to move some of them into the substitute to try and alleviate losing those young superstar teachers. So that is one of the key steps that we've implemented in this. We've also, with this distribution of funds, we are going to be gathering that information so we will know much better what schools are saying they were going to have to reduce staffing. We are going to have our assistant superintendents working with each school, looking at their reserves, looking at their staffing to make sure that we do provide the best service for students and children. So that's another step that we are taking to alleviate the problem as much as we can. So those are some of the things that we're looking at that are different than we've had to do in the past.
When we come forward in May with the actual staffing staffing numbers, what schools and central units will be staffing to, that will give us, in fact, the clear picture of what the impact is going to be for our staff moving forward. And Mr. Fraser, is there anything you could add to that, those statements?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's also important to note that when we come forward on May 24th, there will be an idea in terms of what the impact may be on positions. In terms of the actual impact on staff, I know that in many instances, people will take a look at whatever reductions do need to be done, doing it through attrition in terms of not filling vacant positions or filling behind people who have retired or resigned. They will also take a look at perhaps not filling positions for a temporary period of time if someone's on a leave of absence. So I think there are a number of different factors that will go into trying to minimize the actual impact on staff themselves. Having said that, if there is an impact, there are processes in place within our collective agreements and within our staffing procedures to ensure that our staff are treated fairly through that process.
Thank you. Mr. Fraser.
Thank you. It was a strong attempt, I have to say. So thank you to all three of you for that attempt, and we'll learn the truth in terms of hard numbers in May. I just want to say that if it sounds like if we're not filling positions that are vacant, et cetera, that there will be implications at the student level. I do appreciate that that the administrative team has done everything in its means to minimize those impacts, and commend the central staff for trying to operate with three times the cut that will be faced at the school level, because I know that won't be easy when you're taking on more work and seeing a cut as well, essentially. So, but I do know that parents and students and that our school-based staff really do appreciate the efforts that are being taken centrally. So that ends my comments.
Thank you, Trustee Hoffman. Trustee Rick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just a comment in terms of our reserves is just want to be clear perhaps to those who are listening, you know, on the web or out in the audience, that these reserves are not just sitting in a bank account, one central bank account that, you know, we can pull out of. They are in fact held by our central department units and our schools. So when we say we're going to draw on our reserves, we actually are drawing on other people's monies that they've saved very carefully to support a computer upgrade or whatever. So plans will have to change if, you know, people, we go ahead and the superintendent says, you know, please consider spending some of your reserves on staffing. I also heard the superintendent say that, you know, there will be a day of reckoning, you know, and we heard this actually, he said this to the previous board, he said this last year when we did choose from our level to say we're going to spend 14 million, I think it was, out of our reserves. 9 million, sorry. Keep the record straight. And he said, you know, we can't do this indefinitely, and so here we are again, and we're perhaps not going to do it from the top down, we're asking it to come from the bottom up. And there will be a day of reckoning. And so how does that, so I think as a board we need to look at the decisions we make and the implications of those. So for example, we do value you know, giving our staff professional development opportunities, and so we follow through on that by funding, I think it's approximately $1 million or so for leaves of absences for education, etc. You know, we made a decision to have a moratorium on school closure, and I think that's having a financial impact. And so I just really like my fellow trustee board members to think about that going forward into the next budget year. You know, we have to really look at our decisions and the impact that they're having on our PNNOM funds and our kids, and could we be making, perhaps changing some of our decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Any further comments or questions from my colleagues? Seeing none, I will call the vote on this recommendation. All those in favor, please signify. And that is carried unanimously. Report number seven, excuse me. Report number eight, the District 3-Year Capital Plan 2012-2013. We have received a request from two speakers to speak to this item. The speakers have been advised they have up to 3 minutes to make their comments. As per the board's procedures, we will hear first from the speakers. I will then call upon Dr. Lauren Parker to introduce the report, after which the floor will be open for trustee discussion. I would ask Mr. Dalen Breen and Ms. Charlene Bowman to descend to the lower level. You can either address us from the comfort of the table here or standing at the podium. And I would ask we'll defer to Ms. Charlene Bowman to address us first. Choose whatever your venue is. Ms. Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening. I come to you today as a representative for the Esther Starkman K-9 school. I'm the current chair there. And I'd like to draw your attention to the 3-year capital plan that you are about to discuss in regards to items number one and number two. About the module units that can be attached to our new schools that were just established and opened here last year. Right now, our pre-enrollment at Esther Starkman is at 787 students today, with 104 kids of those enrolled in kindergarten. We have currently 4 kindergarten classes and are possibly looking at 6 for this next year alone. We have our boundaries closed, but our population continues to rise, and there is an additional 1,012 single-family lots yet to be developed in our attendance area, which will put additional pressure on the school moving forward. Currently, we have slotted 30 homeroom classes next year with 28 classroom spaces. To accommodate these other two classrooms, we are having to use specialty rooms such as art and CTS. The only other option is to increase class sizes, and as mentioned before in this meeting, that your ideal class size would be to have 17 kids per class. That would exceed that number alone in kindergarten if we only continued with 4 classes. The administration in the district clearly understands the schooling issues, as you have outlined this as your number one and two priorities. It is my wish that you reflect upon the actions that may need to be taken to ensure that this capital plan gets funded so that our students are not overpopulated in a school that is in a developing area, and that our kids can get the attention and the education that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. Mr. Green.
Chair and trustees, thank you for hearing me tonight. I'm Dalen Green, as you've already mentioned. I'm a parent and member of the Johnny Bright School Parent Council, some of which are here and watching us online as well. I'm here to encourage the support of an item on the capital plan, the addition of a pod of modular classrooms to Johnny Bright School in Rutherford. As you walk the neighborhoods around the school, you can't help but notice the construction of still more single-family homes and multifamily complexes. We are still a growing community, and our school population is bursting. Next year, we will have 123 kindergarten students enrolled at Johnny Bright School, which is likely 6 classes, 7.17 if you go with the 17 per class, and over 100 more students than we have now in other grades. The neighborhoods around Johnny Bright School are attractive to families with school-aged children. The student population will continue to grow as the unfinished sections of the community are built. The design features of the neighborhoods will continue to make the area attractive to young families well into the future. We are deeply concerned that our children's school could lose important learning spaces and creative collaborative spaces that were so thoughtfully designed to help our children learn. For example, the art, drama, and workshop spaces. So we're asking you to please support the addition of a pod of modular classrooms to Johnny Bright School in Rutherford. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. And thanks to both of you for taking the time out of your busy lives to share your views. As I mentioned earlier this evening, listening to our public and having our public inform us as we move forward to make decisions is an extremely important part of being an accountable school board. Thank you. With that, I will call upon Dr. Lauren Parker to introduce the report.
Mr. Chairman, trustees, Superintendent Smith, good evening. I'm pleased to present the proposed priorities in the three-year capital plan 2012-2015. I'm joined by Mr. Schwittiger, the Director of Facilities Design, Mr. LeBay, Manager of Planning and Property Management, and Ms. Duquette, Senior Planner with Planning Department. Mr. Chair, the district is required to submit a three-year capital plan to the province each spring, identifying the capital priorities. The deadline for submission to the province is May 1st. The three-year capital plan 2012-2015 is in line with the district's 10-year facility plan 2009-18. The information contained within the 10-year facilities plan reflects the demographic realities of the district, but the 10-year plan is not required to be modified annually. The three-year capital plan is organized into three sections: leases and other projects, new construction, additions, and replacement schools, preservation and upgrading of existing schools. Mr. Chairman, in terms of leases and other projects, lease support valued at $513,015 for Major General Greasebaugh is requested for the first 6 months of 2012. The existing school is currently leased from Canada Lands Incorporated, and the lease will be terminated once the new ASAP 2012 school in Greasebaugh can be occupied. Annual support for the Miskwetchi Academy lease valued at $1,026,000 for the next 3 years is also requested. We have not been receiving provincial lease support for the Miskwetchi Academy, however, we continue to request that support. $250,000 is requested for value management studies annually, and $10 million annually for asbestos abatement is requested. Funding to conduct value management studies is requested to determine the most feasible method of modernizing school preservation projects. Provincial policy is to replace a building if the anticipated cost of the proposed preservation is over 75% of the replacement value of the building. Value management studies would allow the identification of replacement buildings in advance of funding approval. Mr. Chairman, in terms of new construction, additions, and replacement school priorities, five new construction priorities are recommended to provide local accommodation to new suburban growth areas. Each of these areas is experiencing rapid levels of development and growth in terms of student residency. With respect to additions specifically, a two-classroom addition is requested for Esther Starkman and Johnny Bright schools. This is based on current student residency, current enrollment, and the number of students pre-enrolled at each of these schools. As of April 21st, and you had some updated information this evening, but as of April 21st, there were 102 kindergarten students pre-enrolled at Esther Starkman School for September, and 122 students were pre-enrolled at Johnny Wright School. With respect to new school construction requests, a new K-9 school is proposed in Terwilliger Heights to accommodate the neighborhoods of Hodgson, McTaggart, and McGrath Heights. The new school would provide relief to the enrollment pressure on Esther Starkman that is projected to continue into the future. Elementary students residing in these neighborhoods cannot be accommodated within Esther Starkman School and are currently transported to Brander Garden School, a significant distance and travel time from their homes. This is the closest school with capacity to accommodate students living in these neighborhoods. A new K-6 school is proposed in Heritage Valley to accommodate the neighborhoods of Blackburn, Black Mud Creek, Callahan, and Richford. The new school would provide relief to the pressures on Johnny Bright School that are projected to continue into the future. According to the 2009 city census, the number of 0 to 4 year olds is almost double the number of 5 to 9 year olds living in these neighborhoods. If Johnny Bright School continues to pre-enroll at the current rate, 1,100 students will need to be accommodated in that school in 5 years. We move in Blackburn, Black Mud Creek, and Richford neighborhoods from Johnny Bright's attendance area into a separate new school is a recommended accommodation strategy. A new K-6 school is proposed in Lewis Farms to accommodate projected growth in the neighborhoods of Stewart Greens, Souter Greens, Weber Greens, Secord, and Rosenthal. The new school would provide relief to the pressures on Winterburn School as the area continues to grow and develop. The proposed school would accommodate the existing and future students in the neighborhoods located east of Winterburn Road. Winterburn School would continue to accommodate students living in Westview Village and the developing areas of Big Lake, Secord, and Rosenthal west of Winterburn Road. A new school, K-9 school, is proposed to serve the Windermere Plan area, which includes the neighborhoods of Ambleside, Windermere Estates, and the two new neighborhoods commencing development, Keswick and Glen Ridding. The area has rapidly developed over the past 2 years and is projected to have significant growth in the near future. These areas are located south of the Anthony Henry Drive, again creating lengthy transportation distances and travel times to the nearest schools with capacity to accommodate this growth. Travel times for areas closer to mature areas for Terwilliger neighborhoods are currently at 60 minutes on yellow bus service. The area is designated to Brander Gardens and River Bend schools. These schools will be challenged to meet the future anticipated growth in the Windermere area. Finally, a new K-9 school is proposed in Heritage Valley to accommodate the neighborhoods of Allard, Chappelle, and DeRochet. These new neighborhoods are rapidly developing and projected to have significant growth in the next 3 to 5 years. Distances from these new neighborhoods to establish elementary and junior high schools in Cascateo and Pretolia will be significant. Future needs in already developing areas will continue to be monitored in terms of potential required local capacity, including Big Lake, Lake District, the Meadows, Pilot Sound, and the Palisades. With respect to replacement schools, 3 replacement schools were proposed in the previous plan, 1 in each of the 3 mature area sectors of the city. With the current moratorium on school closures, we have not included a location for a consolidation project, as each project would have represented consolidation of more than one school into a new replacement school. However, a placeholder has been included in year 3 of the plan as a value management study or other consolidation initiative as may be identified by year 3. To provide a context for the foregoing recommendations, the new construction priorities are based on the existing student population residing in the areas and the future growth patterns as approved by City Council. The areas in orange on this map indicate neighborhoods currently developing, the purple represents planned development in the near future, and the blue areas are in the process of being planned for developmental approval. The Capital Region Board's priority growth areas plan, represented on this map, indicates that both the city and the region's suburban growth will continue to provide many opportunities for new suburbs to develop in areas at the city's edge and fringe areas immediately outside of the city boundary. The areas indicated by CW, CE, O, and F include significant land reserves outside of the City of Edmonton's boundary. The next series of slides indicate how the student population in the city has changed since 1970. As we can see, by 2010, the public student population spread out over a larger city area. And the large circles within the inner city in 1970, which represent more students, have reduced over time while rising in newer areas. Mr. Chairman, with respect to the recommended priorities for preservation and upgrading of existing facilities, the priorities are based on last year's priorities. 19 priorities are identified in the plan, and no new preservation projects have been funded from last year's submission, and no new projects have been announced since funding was received in 2007 to modernize East Glen, Prince Charles, Strathcona Phase 1, and Forest Heights Phase 1. A map of the preservation projects completed from 1988 to 2010 is included for the board's information. Most of these 50 modernizations are located in the three mature sectors of the city, Central, South Central, and West One. Mr. Chairman, it's important to provide a provincial funding context for these recommendations. In terms of the capital funding context in Alberta, the provincial budget 2011 was announced in February of 2011. The province released its capital plan until 2013-2014 concurrently. The amount of funding that will be available for the K-12 school facility infrastructure is highlighted in pink. Available funding for capital priorities and IMR province-wide will decline from $720 million invested in 2009-2010 down to $177 million in 2013-14. This is a decline of 76%. The K-12 education and post-secondary education sectors will both experience considerable funding decline for capital facility funding when compared to other sectors such as municipal infrastructure, provincial highways, government facilities, and health facilities. K-12 funding is in bold on this graph. Historically, the province has required the district's three-year capital plan to be organized into three distinct sections based on the varying types of need. While categorizing in three sections is still important for planning purposes, this year the province is requiring an aggregated list of district priorities for submission on a three-year priority basis. Based on the information provided throughout this presentation, it is our recommendation that for each of the 3 years, project priorities be identified with leases and other projects first, new construction priorities second, and preservation priorities third. The two ASAP modular additions are listed at the beginning of the total list given the urgency for resolution to capacity issues at these two schools. Mr. Chairman, given the new area growth pressures, the lack of funded preservation projects, and the fiscal outlook of infrastructure funding for the education sector in Alberta, preparing the capital priorities plan this year with aggregated priorities magnifies the many challenges faced by the district in the area of student accommodation. Mr. Chairman, this concludes our introduction to this report. At this time, my colleagues and I will be pleased to respond to any questions the trustees may have.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Trustee Shipka, before you begin your comments, would you move that we extend our meeting beyond 9 o'clock?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Shipka. All those in favor? That is approved unanimously. Trustee Shipka, please begin your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the report. I have a question. I'm very, very much struggle with section 2 of the report that advocates the building of new schools. We've heard a number of times that about the surplus of space we have in our schools, too few students, too much space, and yet we're advocating building more schools. Does that not even compound the problem that, to me, that would drain a lot of students from some of the existing schools? That's happened with the last opening of schools, of the ASAP one. And that's put pressure to close even more schools, and just to me seem to compound the problem. The second concern I have is that our districts pay based on number of students, not on the school. And so we simply, regarding the maintenance of our schools, we run a $25 million deficit for the funds we receive to operate the plan operations and maintenance of the schools. And if we build even more schools, our funds are diluted even further, and thus ultimately diverting even more funds from the classroom into infrastructure. It seems to me to be going at the wrong approach. Would the administration care to respond, please? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, that outlines the challenges that we are facing as a district, because we have our growth in the outlying areas. We currently are accommodating that growth in the schools further into the center part of the city. As the city continues to grow, we are increasing the ride times for our younger students, particularly it's an issue. We are increasing that ride time to levels that are not considered acceptable within the district standards. And so that's why and part of the planning principles, we have six planning principles that have been, we've been directed by the board to adhere to. And one of the principles is to accommodate students as close as where they live as we possibly can. So those are the challenges that we face, and we certainly acknowledge that building of new schools does add to our infrastructure, and that has associated issues with that as well.
Trustee Shipka?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's certainly true that we do wish to accommodate students as much as we can where they live, but we also have, the board's also passed a motion that we seek to keep as many schools open and not closed, and it seems to me that advocating to build even more schools is supporting ultimately closing more schools in mature neighborhoods. So that's a concern I have with this presentation. Otherwise, it seems very sound. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Shipka. I know others are desirous of speaking to this, or at least I assume that others are, but there's no one in the queue at the moment, and so I'm going to take advantage of this, notwithstanding my board lighting up in the last 2 seconds. Following up on Trustee Shipka's remarks about this difficult struggle that we have by developing or asking for funding to construct new schools in outlying areas and recognizing what impact that has on more and more families moving out of the inner city core and declining enrollment, et cetera, I am going to suggest that we move in a different direction here. And so I would offer the following amendment to our capital plan. Move to delete any reference to new school construction and add language that will identify the urgent need for funding to maintain and upgrade our aging schools in mature neighborhoods. And so I will begin debate on that amendment. We have committed to a moratorium. We have also committed as a board to a series of public meetings that focus on analyzing, discussing, and receiving feedback on the significant issues related to school viability and school closures. Last week we had a very stimulating conversation on urban sprawl. I believe it was quite apparent, as Trustee Shipka has alluded to, that by continuing this practice of simply asking for schools ad infinitum in outlying areas, and I want to make clear to the parents attending and presenting on behalf of Esther Starkman and Johnny Bright, I'm not talking about modular construction. I do not view that as a new school construction. By continuing down the path of our past practice, I believe there's a real likelihood that we are a significant player in creating urban sprawl. And while I acknowledge that the city has the foremost responsibility to say no to limitless development, we are certainly aiding and abetting by continuing to ask for new schools in developing areas every time those areas hit a population threshold that a new school makes sense. I think we have to be fair in understanding the impact of approving an amendment like this. We've just received funding for a number of P3 schools. I would say the greatest optimist in this area would probably suspect that it's going to be a year or more before we receive funding for additional new schools, especially given the current economic climate. So this may be more of a principled statement that we are prepared not only to step back by creating a moratorium and take a fresh look at school viability and the issues affecting school closures, but we're also prepared to take a fresh look at our practices in this area. And so I encourage my colleagues to consider making a statement about urban sprawl this evening, our role in contributing to urban sprawl, I'm sure that's going to generate some significant public conversation, and indeed it should. Thank you to myself, Mr. Chair. comments or questions? I did have some speakers that were in the queue to speak to the capital plan, but I will now open the floor for comments or questions to the amendment. Trustee Spencer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and indeed you are great. I would take a different tact on this one, but probably come to the same conclusion. And that is the budget amount from the province. That's the dropping down to $177 million from $729 million. And I think the reality of that means that we're looking at no new schools. And so setting the issue of sprawl aside, I think it becomes one of transparency. And are we being upfront with the public in saying that when a developer points to an area of a new community and says, and that's where the school is going to be, we'll be saying maybe, but certainly not anytime soon. And I think we owe it to people who are looking to invest and finance construction of a new house to let them know that probably they're also making a decision that their children are going to be riding a bus to school instead of being able to walk to school. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Spencer. Trustee Ripley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Well, I will have to vote against your recommendation. The city is growing. Mr. LeVay's presentation at our moratorium committee meeting the other day shows, if, and I'll ask for correction if I'm wrong on my memory, but I think it was 300% growth in the outskirts. Is that what people are remembering? That's
Mr. LeVay.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure the exact percentage. And
it was on a graph, and it was showed clearly that there's going to be way more growth in the suburbs over the next 25 years than in the
mature
neighborhoods.
There'll be significant growth in newer neighborhoods compared to mature neighborhoods. Yeah, 70% in newer areas.
70%. Okay, thank you. Not 300%. A little overstatement there. In any case, I appreciate the board chair's comments about us contributing to urban growth. However, I think that we react to urban growth. We don't contribute to it. I did live in a brand new neighborhood, and it took, you know, 12 years for a school to arrive there. And I remember Trustee Estinger saying, you know, it took 20 years for a school to arrive in her neighborhood. So I think that people who move into those neighborhoods are well aware that there is no school and that they're going to have to wait for a school. It strikes me that our mandate is to serve kids really well and give them an excellent education, whether they live in the suburbs or whether they live downtown. And so to say that we're not going to meet the obvious needs as shown on the, you know, in terms of Johnny Bright becoming a school of 1,100 kids, is that what we want? I don't think so. Are we going to bus those kids? We asked this question at the moratorium committee meeting. So, okay, the other option would be to bus those 300 kids who are living in Callahan or Allard or, you know, way down south there, right into the inner city. For how long would that take? You know, an hour and a half, et cetera. So is that a good education for setting a good educational environment for kids? So I think we need to walk this very fine line of being, I appreciate the committee's, moratorium committee's desire to support schools in mature neighborhoods. I totally understand that and I'm for that. But I also think you can't just write off all those kids who are living in the suburbs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Trustee Hoffman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think I'll ask a question first and then I'll have a bit of a statement. But my first question is, I think in the presentation we saw at the moratorium committee, the projection was that the majority of Edmontonians will be living outside of the Henday within 25 years. Is that correct for a general statement?
Mr. LeVay?
That's correct. Again, it was an estimate of 70% of new growth being in new areas versus 30% in mature or existing areas.
Right. So statements around densification in the core, when we actually look at the city's long-term plans, the densification, the new growth in terms of densification won't be happening in the core. The new growth primarily, according to the 25-year plan, is outside of the Henday. Is that correct?
Both in the city's plan, Mr. Chair, and in the capital region plan, that would be correct.
Thank you. Those realities are, I think, would be a surprise to most Edmontonians to learn. And anyway, I appreciate you bringing that to our attention, as well as this proposal. My concern, though, is around financial responsibility in terms of we already have concerns about what we're going to do next year, opening two new schools and not closing schools. We've made that commitment. And therefore, I have concerns about putting forward the priority for new projects, including a number of new constructions, without having any guarantee from the province. As Trustee Spencer mentioned, that there will be increases in terms of provincial funding to support these new schools. So I definitely have concern about approving a plan that has so much new construction without having any increased funding for operations from the province. And there is no increased funding. As Trustee Shipka also mentioned, the funding follows the student and not the school. So that to me is a major concern. And until there's increased funding from the province, I have a really hard time approving a plan that would put us in a position where we would require substantial resources to set up these new schools to a standard that I think any parent would expect in terms of a new school. So so that's my comment and my question, I guess, on that. So I don't have any further questions or comments at this point.
Thank you, Trustee Hoffman. Further comments, questions on this amendment? Trustee John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question regarding the reference to the Hende. I'm aware that there's a significant amount of housing on the south side and the south side of the Hende, but I live on the north end where the Hende is just being built, and it's out in the country now. I know that will change probably in the future, but I mean, the way it stands at this moment in time, there is very little. There's lots of development on the south side of the Hende at this moment, even on the northern sector of the Hende. So I guess my question is, when you make the reference about you know, the percentage of homes that are going to be on the perimeter or on the outside of the Hende, are you also including the northern section of the Hende in that? In that reference?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we are including that. The 70-30 split is actually statistics put forward by the City of Edmonton within the City of Edmonton's boundary. It would include the northern growth areas as well as the south and west. These are also embedded in the municipal development plan, the way we grow, which was just approved by council last year. The growth of the suburban areas, both within and beyond the Ring Road and the boundary of the City of Edmonton, are articulated in the region board's plan as well. So areas O and F, while they include components that are within the City of Edmonton's boundary, there are significant amounts of development outside the City of Edmonton's boundary, which would put them north or northeast of the Anthony Hende.
Okay.
Trustee Young.
And then I also wanted to just make a comment regarding the amendment. You know, I voted in support of the moratorium. And I really do feel like I want to be able to support the moratorium work and see what we can do to find options and alternatives to closing schools. But, you know, with looking towards the future, I feel that we can't ignore the fact that we are going to need to build new schools. That being said, I certainly don't want to aid and abet urban sprawl in that regard. But urban sprawl is going to happen, you know, whether or not we say we're going to, you know, in 5 years' time we want to put up a new school there. I feel like I'm torn, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, because, you know, I support the moratorium work And, you know, I plan to attend all the meetings if at all possible so that I get all the information. But just the way things stand and the number of schools we have open and the small enrollment, I mean, to me, the writing is on the wall. We will eventually have to close schools. That will be inevitable, in my opinion. We will definitely be closing some schools. I don't know which ones. I don't know when. But sadly, I think that's certainly going to be a reality. But I don't know. I guess I'm just saying this because I really feel pulled in both directions and feel quite torn over this. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee John. Trustee Shipp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the consequences if we should not adhere to the revised motion and no longer advocate the construction of new schools? Do we drop off a queue? Can your administration apprise us of that, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll certainly begin, and I'll call on my planning colleagues in terms of that. If there was a queue that we could logically make sense of in terms of the government making its decisions, this would certainly be a concern. And I'm being frank in terms of we've been diligently, year over year, providing three-year plans, and with many years of no action. Now, most recently, we've had a lot of action. And all of the lists, the schools that were on this list were, in fact, identified, and the schools were built in that order that the board approved in terms of the order of construction and priority. Mr. Chairman, I really cannot speak to the government's decision about this because it is truly a government decision in relation to that. So. I think, Mr. Chairman, I think that's all I'll say to that point, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Shipka, anything further?
No, it looks like Mr. LeVay perhaps wishes to supplement, but I just want to know if this is a major departure, if we no longer advocate for new schools, and just want the board to be apprised if there are any consequences that we should be aware of. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. LeVay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been trying to acquire school and park sites my whole urban planning career, 20 years of it. And to get quality sites out of developers and to get the support of all city departments is very, very difficult. One of the potential consequences of this decision could be our loss of ability to have any sites in new areas in rather short order. If we are not included in neighborhood and area plan bylaws, we're out. If our competitors are in and we're out, we're out. There's no opportunity to go back. I can't stress that enough, and it's an abandonment, in my view, of our entire city's history and our board's history from before this was a community of a village. Would be abandoned to provide any type of local accommodation to neighborhoods. And those are serious permanent implications, and I cannot stress those enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. LeVay. Trustee Shook, anything further?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Shook. Trustee Hoffman on the second round of comments.
Yes. Thank you very much for that caution, Mr. LeVay, and thank you, Trustee Shipka, for asking the question. I can't help but be reminded of something the minister said in a letter to the Calgary Herald less than a month ago, I think, and he was talking about when you're in a problematic financial situation as a family, you don't build a new house. You prioritize putting food on the table and clothes on your kids' back. And I feel like with this new construction that we're facing, that the province has kind of put us in this challenging situation. We're getting a new house. We need to buy food, we need to buy clothes, and we need to provide for the kids that we have currently and the buildings that we have currently. So I really appreciate the caution. I wish that we weren't in this current situation where we were trying to figure out how we were going to outfit the new schools next year and potentially several new schools in the coming years. I really am appreciate the caution about retaining those sites, but I'm really concerned that it will be problematic financial decision making if we choose to move forward with these and not be able to staff them or not be able to outfit them with the proper resources. And if I could have are we essentially deciding tonight, I guess, would be my question to administration, whether we're going to support old schools or whether we're going to open new schools? Because I think that that is a really scary decision to have to make at this point. Would it be possible to staff our existing school structures and build new schools without increased revenue from the province, I guess, would be my question to administration, if they can attempt to answer that.
Mr. Superintendent, I would like to...
The board is aware that our staffing follows where students actually go to school, and that the challenge that we face, Mr. Chairman, is that as we add more school space, school enrollments will in fact drop significantly in some of our areas, but that where the students actually attend school, that's where we would be staffing. The issue really revolves more around how we manage plant operation and maintenance funding for a higher amount of space, simply because we are funded primarily on a per pupil basis. That's where the issue becomes critical.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Hoffman.
So I guess with this information at hand and knowing that we are expected to submit the three-year capital plan to the province by May 1st, I'm wondering what in an attempt to understand the implications of voting either way more fully, I'm wondering what the implications would be of deferring this until a point after May 1st for trustees to attempt to gather more information on the implications if possible. I feel like it could be problematic to make this decision tonight.
Mr. Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, I guess we are striving to achieve a provincial request, and I'm just confirming that with Dr. Parker, right? What we're up against, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. LeVay has stated that clearly, is that the ongoing planning of an area structure plans and all of the sites for schools, that sort of thing, is ongoing work, and I'm not able to speak to those timelines at this point in time. Perhaps Dr. Parker, if you could elaborate.
Dr. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Superintendent Smith, and indeed you've outlined the challenges. While we don't expect to get schools, we didn't expect to get the 9, but we did, but we don't really expect to with the current funding structure. If we take ourselves out of the queue, we guarantee that we don't. That's one other issue for us, that everybody else is submitting their capital plan, including Evan and Catholic, and they have identified new schools in their capital plan. So you are competing for funding. It's a limited funding. So we can delay, but we know that the capital planning process at the province goes on, and that would be a challenge for us.
Thanks, Jim. Just for clarification, I thought Edmonton Catholic was still to vote on their capital plan tonight. I didn't think that it had gone forward at this point. It has now.
Mr. Chair, the Catholic administration is presenting to their board this evening their three-year plan. It includes 5 new schools and 8 preservations. And that was shared with us by their administration. So what the outcome of their recommendation is, I don't know.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Hoffman. I have Trustee Spencer next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It does seem to me that keep doing what you've always done, even though it's clearly not working, I'm struggling with that. But I wonder if maybe a proposition that's less scary is just to change the order of the list, to continue to have those new schools on the list, just move them to the bottom of the list, and then use this time to consider what our priorities are as a board when it comes to planning, because our planning department has acted on the current priorities, and I think the issue may be a need of our board to look at those priorities and make changes, probably through the work of the moratorium committee. So just throwing that out there, the possibility that the new schools stay on the list but are just moved to a lower priority on the list.
Dr. Burke. Mr. Chairman, we certainly will be directed by the board in terms of the structure of the capital plan. The challenge for us is that we, you know, in terms of determining how we're going to accommodate the rapid growth of our students in the outlying areas. And we have that compounded by the fact that we're now into the leapfrogging over schools to accommodate those students, and that problem continues. So in terms of looking at all of this, we have to consider that as well.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Trustee Spencer, anything further?
No, thanks.
Trustee John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is to administration that, in your opinion, what is the longest period of time that the district could hold off on putting forward a plan for new schools? Mr. LeBay had referenced in his 20-year career that this is really, you know, important, but it takes a long time for this to actually come to fruition. There, you know, sometimes it takes 20 years for a school to come into an area. So my question, what's the longest period of time that the district could hold off on putting forward a plan for new schools? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Park.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to give you an answer on that. That's really challenging to say, because we have such rapid growth right now, and we have projections for even greater growth. So it's really hard to put a timeline on how long we should hold off. So I'd like to be more specific, but I'm just looking at the growth and how we're trying to accommodate that right now makes it very difficult.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Trustee John.
That wasn't helpful at all.
Didn't think
and didn't that. Answer my question. just thought if we can hold off. I mean, I also liked Trustee Spencer's idea of, you know, maybe putting it lower on the list of priorities for new schools. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee John. Trustee Rick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Well, my mind was going somewhat in the same direction as Trustee Spencer's by looking at the aggregated list. What I wanted to do, though, was to point out to my colleagues that actually, if you know, we saw the slides of new school, new school, new school, new school, but when you actually look at this list, that's not how it plays out. You know, the first are the modular additions for Esther Startman and Johnny Bright, but then we get into two leases, we get into value management studies, asbestos abatement, then the two new schools, and then we have a whole list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 more priorities that are actually in mature neighborhoods. So I think that personally the planning department has really struggled with, you know, trying to be fair and serve the needs of everybody in the city. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Trustee Shipka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I support Trustee Spencer's proposal. Would we not, if we simply reverse the order between Section 2 and 3, and the new school is advocating as a lower priority, but we would still remain in the queue, would we not, Mr. Chair?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
So, hence, I'm hoping my colleague, Trustee Spencer, will put that forward as an amendment. It seems like a worthwhile compromise. We remained in the queue. I think it's pretty serious consequences we need to consider if we simply remove these schools altogether from the queue and drop out, considering the rapid growth we have. And at the same time, we need to reflect that I think this board is has a shift in focus towards maintaining or better maintaining some of the schools we already have, as opposed to building even more schools and creating even more capacity. So I'm asking if my colleague, Trustee Spencer, will make that an amendment, a motion to reverse sections 2 and 3, Mr. Chair.
I'll continue to move through the queue. I'm sure your advice has been noted. I have Trustee Johnner in here, but I believe you're satisfied.
My question was about one of the leases, but that's probably speaking towards the, was that a formal amendment that you put on the table?
Yes.
Yeah, so we're still speaking to that, so
yes.
I can wait for my question after. Thank you.
After the amendment has been disposed of. Okay, fine. Any further comments to this? Well, I will close, and my colleagues will be able to offer anything they want after we dispose of this. I think we have to be clear that, and firstly, let me pose this in the form of a question. In my view, I believe we have to be clear that this is this year's capital plan. Next year's capital plan will come before the board next year. We're not necessarily making a decision that's going to bind the district for 3, 5, or 10 years. Am I correct in that interpretation, Dr. Parker?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you are correct. And another point which might be helpful is the province doesn't always fund according to our priorities, so they could jump the queue at any point.
Indeed. And just let me be clear on one more point of clarification. The question was asked about the feasibility of deferring beyond the May 1st date, when it's my understanding we are expected to deliver our capital plan to the province. Is this just an odd situation, or is this a situation that we create problems for the district? Would the ministry be sending us a stern letter advising us that we were in breach? What would be the outcome of that, Dr. Parker?
Mr. Chairman, we would request an extension of the deadline so you wouldn't get that letter.
And so that would not be that problematic, extending our capital plan for a few weeks or until the end of May? Would that be a fair assumption?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't asked for an extension, but I'm not thinking because of the level of funding that we're not getting, probably won't be as big an issue as maybe in other years.
Indeed. With that, I will just pause, because if someone did want to bring forward a motion to defer rather than spending the time voting on this, this would be an opportunity. And Trustee Hoffman is in with you. Trustee Hoffman.
I would like to move that we defer this until the next public board meeting.
All right. We have a motion, deferral motion before the board. I wonder, just to help my colleagues and myself, Trustee Hoffman, if you could clarify, is this decision to defer simply to allow the board to have further reflection on the matter, or do you see us acquiring additional information? I'm not sure what the deferral is intended to achieve.
I would like to acquire additional information on the implications of that Mr. LeBay mentioned, as well as the implications that should we choose to support an amendment that prioritizes both renovations in existing schools, or implications of moving priorities around on the district priority list. I do, however, have concerns about deferring any request for modular classrooms in two schools that are obviously so over current capacity and enrollment for next year. But I absolutely have hesitation on voting either to support new school construction or to vote on the amendment to oppose new school construction. So I think that a deferral would allow me additional time to gather more information about the implications.
I will open the floor here shortly, but then if this deferral motion were to be approved, in order to provide some clear indication for our administration, would you be prepared to offer a request for information at the conclusion of the meeting, identifying exactly what additional information something that, like, could be brought before the board?
I'd be happy to meet personally with the director of board and staff.
Okay.
The director. Director Taylor, specifically to try to flesh out some of these concerns. I am reminded of the meeting that we all attended at the beginning when our board governance, I believe it was Ellie Mina, talked about how if there is any point where you feel you're not prepared to make a decision, you have a responsibility to request a deferral. And I respectfully request that deferral without being able to articulate specifically what information, that maybe in the next half hour, but clearly wanting more information within the next 2 weeks. And also, I think that the voices of two trustees who aren't here tonight would be important to have in these discussions.
Okay. Having expressed that, are you satisfied that that serves as your opening remarks and support?
I am. Motion?
Thank you, Trustee Hoffman. I will now open the floor for trustee comments to the deferral motion. Are there any trustee comments, questions regarding the deferral motion? Trustee Spencer.
I think deferral is better than my original plan to flip a coin. So I sympathize with the dilemma Trustee Hoffman is in, and find myself in it too. I'm attracted by the idea of not asking for new schools, but do feel like I have a diligence duty to know what the consequences of that decision are before I make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Spencer. Trustee Ripley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think that we've been told about the implications, and I would vote against the deferral with all due respect to Trustee Hoffman and her comments about wanting more information. I'm just not sure. I can't see what more information we're going to get that will help us you know, vote on this on the list as and the capital plan as projected, as presented by the administration. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Trustee Cleary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've sat back and listened to all my colleagues talk about the capital plan. First of all, I have a comment that I find it a little bit precarious that as my first term as a trustee, knowing how important it is to support and basically make a decision on this three-year capital plan, I find it a little bit precarious that we just got the information in this week's package, and it's a decision has to be made tonight. Nowhere in the information did I have any sort of idea about that. Because we do have, you know, a deadline. I understand that you can ask the government for the deadline. It's always better when other districts are doing that. If you look at the budget, I mean, we all have an extension on the deadline till the end of June. So that makes our job a little bit easier managing our timelines. I also find it that delaying the inevitable when we have the expertise of administration who are very familiar with this work and what that may look like. I also struggle with the notion, and I will speak to that in regards to deferring something because two of our colleagues aren't here. As a mover of a motion already tonight that got deferred because two trustees are not here. I think that's a practice that the board, this current board, should have a discussion with. And I'm pleased that one of my colleagues actually approached me on the break that it may present a few more difficulties for trustees. The fact that trustees aren't here, I don't think we can defer our decision making based on that. You know, they're not here. We have seven trustees who are all privy to this same information. So it leads me to believe that deferring might be not a good idea just in the fact that considerable time has been spent deliberating on something that is in front of us. A decision needs to be made, and whether or not sometimes we're comfortable or not, you know, maybe we needed to do more research or understanding before we got to the table rather than defer it and, you know, make this a little more complex than I think it needs to be. So I'm definitely not in support of deferring something that, you know, we're not comfortable with because two of our trustees aren't here. I think we have an obligation to make our decision with what's presented in front of us tonight. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Cleary. As a point of clarification, Trustee Hoffman has indicated that her deferral motion is to defer the decision on the capital plan. So, Madam Chair, I seek clarification. We have an amendment before the board, and technically the discussion is centered around the amendment. It seems to me we have to dispose of the amendment, but deferring the amendment to a point in time where we have not yet decided to defer a decision on the capital plan is a bit of an issue. So perhaps you could advise the board chair on the best means of dealing with that.
Mr. Chair, the deferral takes precedence over the amendment, and the deferral must be disposed of first before we go back to the amendment. If the deferral is approved, the amendment and the original recommendation are all deferred. They come back.
And so deferral of the capital plan would automatically preserve the amendment as opposed to having to be brought back?
Question of the amendment, correct.
All right, so if my colleagues are clear, this is a deferral motion to defer vote on the capital plan, which will result in the amendment still being part of that consideration if the deferral is approved. Are there any further comments or questions from my colleagues? Trustee Ripley speaking for a second time. I just wonder if other colleagues are. Are there any other of my colleagues that would like to speak to this for the first time? No? Ascertained that. Trustee Ripley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if the administration contacts Alberta Education and says we'd like to have a, you know, an extension, and Alberta Education says, no, sorry, can't do that. We will write you an ASTI letter if you do that. What would the board do if it deferred the decision at that point? Would we have a special board meeting, perhaps, Mr. Chair? Or?
Well, if it's placed in the hands of the board chair, I would have an authority to call a special meeting. Trustees would also have the authority to request a special meeting if five trustees are supportive of that request. So there are a couple of measures that would be available for a standalone meeting to be called in the event of an emergency and the need to consider this in a timely manner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would that satisfy you, Trustee Rickman?
Thank you.
Any further comments on the deferral motion? Seeing none, I will call the question on the motion to defer approval of the capital plan until the first board meeting in May. All those in favor, please indicate. That would be Trustee Shipka, Trustee Johnner, Trustee Spencer, Trustee Colvin, and Trustee Hoffman. All those opposed, Trustee Ripley and Trustee Cleary. That motion is carried. Thank you, Dr. Parker, colleagues. We appreciate your patience on a variety of fronts. Report number 9, responses to trustee requests for information. Trustee Spencer, would you move that this report be received for information, please?
For it?
No. Just kidding.
Okay. Yes, I'll move it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Spencer. Are there trustee comments or questions? Trustee Hoffman.
When I arrived tonight, I saw that there was a supplemental, I believe, to the my request for information, trustees' motions approved since January 2010. I'm just wondering if that's being put on the website or, and if everyone's aware that this is a new revised version of the report. If the administration could speak to that, please.
Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, it hasn't yet been put on the website. Should be up tomorrow.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Trustee Hoffman?
Thank you. So just if anyone's watching at home looking at this report, wondering what happened to some of the other motions that we passed earlier this year, they've been added to this report and they'll be posted. The information, for example, with the anti-bullying advisory committee motion that I put forward, it identifies who the staff person is, Ms. Parker, and that we're in process of meeting. We've met, the board approved the committee, and we had our first meeting on April 11th and so forth. So there is definitely more information to flesh out in this report with regard to current initiatives. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Trustee Hoffman. Trustee Joyner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just, before the meeting tonight, I had noticed that, our package that we had received was indeed insufficient and didn't have all the motions that were on the table. So can we have the assurance that this is the complete one then? This is the full version, the full meal deal?
Mr. Chair, yes. Over the weekend, I sent an email clarifying that we had accidentally cut off at the end of the year, December 2010. So now this revised version includes those up until, I guess, March, the end of March.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor, and thank you, Trustee Connor. Any further comments or questions? Trustee Ripper.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just appreciate the information that the administration provided to Trustee Request 68, which is about daytime meetings and considerations, et cetera, for the work that's being done there. I noted in terms of a choice of day, the administration says the, you know, everything is set up around Tuesday meetings, which has been the practice in the district for a long time. And if the board needed to change its meeting day, you know, a significant administration transition would be needed, and I can relate to that. I know that also recently the board changed its the delivery date of its package of information that comes to it to a Wednesday rather than a Friday, and I'm just wondering that if the administration, that sometimes that creates a problem, I believe, in terms of timeliness of responding to issues that are raised at a certain meeting to be able to respond by the next meeting. I'm wondering if there's a, should we be considering a change of day that would better suit the administration in terms of being able to respond in a timely way to, you know, something that happens at a conference meeting and we want to have it back by a public board meeting, which used to be possible under the old system, but I don't think it's possible anymore.
Mr. Superintendent, did you care to share?
Simply to reiterate with the board that that was one of the considerations when the board decided that it needed to move to the Wednesdays, that indeed it would mean that our responses would take longer, and that is the consequence, and that has been happening on certain kinds of reports moving forward. Whatever day the board chooses to have its board meetings, we would have to have a corresponding shift in terms of how we, or the day we prepare reports to give the administration time to prepare the reports, but also time for the board to receive and review the reports. We would be moving and flexible according to where the board needs to go.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee Ripley, anything further?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Trustee John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, Would one extra day make a difference in the life of administration if the board packages were moved from Wednesday to Thursday, for example, just having one day lead time versus the two? How would that impact our administration? Would that be helpful?
Mr. Superintendent.
Mr. Chairman, I think it would depend entirely on the nature of the report, the complexity of the information that we'd need to address. Although I believe that the information that we have provided is really around the actual time, the board meetings and the time of the current public board meetings. And I think that is what is for consideration here. If the board wishes to have its reports at a different time, then that certainly would be an option or to consider. But that was not what we were contemplating when we were being asked for input on the senior staff consultation relative to board meeting dates. So that wasn't really on our radar, I guess.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Trustee John, anything further?
No, that's all for now. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Trustee Hoffman.
Thank you very much. I'm curious with regard to request 68 regarding the meeting dates, or the times of meetings, sorry, how the recommendation to move to late afternoon came about. If there could be some elaboration on that, I would find that helpful.
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, the central executive team met as we always do on Monday mornings, and I brought this forward. We contemplated different scenarios, if we did it in the morning or if we did it in the afternoon. If we did it in the morning and the afternoon, some of the scenarios played out the same, but then we considered the accessibility of the public attending, and therefore we came up with kind of a compromise, starting late afternoon, going into the early evening. It's just one compromise, one suggestion, but many would work.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Trustee Hoffman?
Nothing further.
Nothing further. Any final comments, questions? Trustee Ritter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just, in reference to Ms. Taylor's comments, I wonder if the administration considered variations of the 3 to 7 time period, 2 to 6, for example, and if you did, could you say why you ended up with 3 to 7, please? Thank you.
Ms. Taylor?
Mr. Chair, quite honestly, we thought it sounded good. And actually, it extended the meeting to an extra hour. And therefore, people leaving from work could make it in. Or, you know, if they have children they need child care for, would allow them to be there at 6 o'clock or so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Any further comments? I would just like to say, in regard to concern about sometimes delays, that we've created this environment for ourselves. It does, having board packages come out on Wednesday, does satisfy the need expressed by a number of trustees for increased time to consider the complexity and information load that these packages entail, but obviously we're seeing some limitations in terms of the ability of the administration to support that. So I suppose what I would conclude there is I think we should do our best to display some patience and understanding and analyze if the report has indeed come to the attention of the administration on very short notice, and technically speaking, the requirement is there for it to be turned around in a very short period of time. We should give some latitude to the administration in this area. With that, I will move to item report number 10. Indeed. Someone move that this report be received for information? Trustee Hoffman, all those in favor? I don't know what Trustee Johnner is saying to me. She's enthusiastically voting to support this. I do not know, but we can address that situation soon. I promise. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Report number 10, Committee, Board Representative, and Trustee Reports. I would now like to begin by calling on the following trustees, asking if they have any reports from the external committees they serve on, beginning with Trustee Ripley, who serves on as our representative on the Edmonton Public Schools Foundation Board of Directors. Trustee Ripley. Anything to report?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I did attend a Board of Governors meeting for the foundation on last Thursday, and want to report that lots of excellent friend raising for public education is happening, from the offering of information sessions, which get people in the door of a public school, to the trustival that happened. And I'm very excited that the fashion show that will feature 19 student teams from 5 high schools is happening tomorrow night, and glad that a few trustees will be in attendance. For those who might be reconsidering attending, you're too late. It's a sold-out event, so tough luck. However, there is still time to attend the Ready for Life breakfast on Thursday, May the 12th, and still time to invite someone to come with you. So if you can and would like to attend that breakfast, please let me know, or you know where to find Ms. Wojtas or Ms. Shuchuk. So I encourage you to spread the word about that great event. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. As the representative of the board on the Alberta School Boards Association Board of Directors, I'd like to report 2 highlights from our last board meeting held a couple of weeks ago. One was a presentation by Diane McConnell on the Action for Inclusion initiative. The other was a fairly thorough evaluation of the executive director, David Anderson, and I'm pleased to report that he received a passing grade and, in fact, a number of commendations on Mr. Anderson's performance. Trustee Johnner, our ASBA Zone 2-3 representative.
Nothing since in the last 2 weeks.
Okay.
We have a meeting on Friday.
Thank you, Trustee Johnner. If I may ask a question in that regard, Friday's meeting will be when our motion to create a school advisory will be presented to the Zone 2-3. What is the trustees are welcome to attend that meeting?
Yes.
It begins at 9:30, and you will formally present argument in support of that resolution?
Yes.
Approximately what time of the day would you anticipate that resolution to be considered? Any sense? I do have a few engagements that day, but I would like to be there for this discussion.
I'm not sure. I'm just looking at the agenda right now.
Okay.
Perhaps can I get back to you?
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
That?
Thank you.
Just need to.
But trustees should be reminded they are welcome to attend that.
Yes.
If they have an interest. Trustee Cleary, a representative on the Alberta School Board Association for Languages Education, or as Valley. Anything to report, Trustee Cleary?
Nothing further to report, other than I forwarded the official release today that has the names of the recipients, which I wasn't able to share at the last meeting.
Thank you, Trustee Cleary. And Trustee Spencer, a representative on the Public School Boards Association of Alberta Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was a meeting since our last get-together here, and at that occasion, among the special treats, was an opportunity to hear from 3 leadership candidates. Lori Blakeman is running for the Liberal Party, and Alison Redford and Doug Horner are running for the Progressive Conservative leadership.
Thank you, Trustee Spencer. And finally, Linkages Committee, on behalf of Trustee McKenzie. Trustee Cleary, did you have anything to report on linkages?
Yes, just a reminder to my colleagues, I did circulate information that we'll be discussing at the next meeting, which is May 4th. And I just wish all of my colleagues, not wish, they need to get me the information. They're the feedback they can provide me so that I can represent them effectively at the meeting on May 4th. So it's quite a lengthy document, good information. It's a tip sheet that I circulated, and the sooner I get that, the better. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Cleary. Are there any further committee board representative or trustee reports? Trustee Johnner.
I would just like to get back to you with regards to Zone 2-3. When I conferred, asked Trustee Ripley, she figured that this item would be first thing in the morning based on her experience and knowledge and the agenda. I just wasn't sure how long it would take for the rest of the items, but she said it would be probably first thing in the morning, like right around 9:30, 9:40, something along those lines. And I'd also like to make mention that the Edwin Carr Awards banquet for the Zone 2-3 is on Friday, May 27th, and all trustees are encouraged to go. And I have one more thing, sorry. I just wanted to mention that the Special Needs Task Force has been hard at it. We've been meeting with our advisory committee and having the task force meeting together as well. We had a meeting this morning. We've been reflecting on the work of the advisory committee. We've added another advisory committee meeting, which has been forwarded to administration, and that advisory committee meeting is on May 4th at 9 o'clock. So if any trustees would care to join us, they're certainly welcome to, and we will be putting our advisory committee hard at work to do work on behalf of us. And that concludes my report. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee John. No further committee board representative or trustee reports. Item H, trustee and board requests for information. Trustee Shipka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the recent NSBA convention I attended, one of the exhibitors was extolling the health benefits of stevia, sometimes pronounced stevia, a natural sweetener alternative to sugar and aspartame. It has zero calories, I was told. To further support the district's priority to foster student and staff health, would administration comment on the merits and drawbacks to promoting the use of stevia in our schools with beverages or food as a natural sweet alternative? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Trustee Shipka. Trustee Hoffman.
I have two. The first is a brief report summarizing the number of staff who have been granted sick leaves, short and long term. The information should include a monthly breakdown over the last 5 years, identifying peak periods of illness by staff groups within our district. And the second request is, can the administration provide any evidence that a modified calendar reduces the number of sick time taken by staff in our district? Thank you.
Trustee Hoffman, Trustee Spencer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Summarize the advantages and disadvantages of shortening the summer break and adding a fall break.
Thank you, Trustee Spencer. And I have one. I would like to report on the feasibility of appointing external members to our audit committee, including an identification of boards across the province that follow this practice and what this practice looks like in format. Item I, notices of motion. Trustee Shipka.
Mr. Chair, the notice of motion is that public board meeting times be amended to run from 2 to 6 p.m. on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month, commencing the first board meeting in September 2011.
Thank you, Trustee Shipka. Trustee Ripley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that the board add the following item to its public board agenda on a regular basis. Tracking progress and excellence in the 2011-14 priorities. The purpose of this agenda item would be threefold. First, to demonstrate and show evidence of meaningful progress in achieving the 2011-14 priorities. Second, to deepen district understanding about what contributes to excellence in these areas and what is needed to sustain it for the benefit of all students. And three, to recognize and celebrate those responsible for the achievement of progress and excellence in the 2011-14 priorities.
Thank you, Trustee Ripley. Item J, meeting dates. Mr. Superintendent, the next board meeting date.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Next meeting dates, May 10th, 6 p.m.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. This meeting is now adjourned.